This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
Today's episode of If These Ovaries Could Talk is brought to you by Ritual and MyFit Jeans. We're excited to have them on board.
Definitely. Welcome aboard, guys. So awkward.
You're always awkward.
I am so awkward. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Robin.
I'm Jamie, and thanks for stopping by.
And we only have you guys after this episode. We only have two more of season two.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
You can feel it winding down.
I know. And then we take a little hiatus.
Hiatus. We need it.
Yes, we do. We love you guys.
Mama needs a break.
We need a little break. And then we're going to come back strong.
In late February.
With really great episodes.
And you know what's exciting is season three, we're going to be able to go like February all the way through June so we can really like maximize Pride stories. Yeah. And I'm so looking forward to that.
Pride.
Yes. Woo.
Yay.
So Jamie.
Yes.
I feel like we can't pass over the fact you lost another award.
I lost another award. It's like, this is becoming a pattern with
we're
us.
We're just so
we're good at losing
happy to be nominated.
No, really.
I woke up and I was like, she's good. Because like, of course I went. If you followed our Instagram stories, you saw how early I go to bed. But I was like, she's going to win.
Yeah, no,
I was like, she's going to win.
Yeah, I didn't. But it was so fun and it was really like awesome. Just like I went through all that, traveled across the country just to hear my name called at an award show.
But
and
also to be alone with your wife for 2 days.
And to be alone, which was great. But yeah, it was worth it.
Well, Jamie, I don't give a fuck. I was very proud of you.
Thanks. It was a Sova's Voice Award.
I mean, this is a big deal.
Listeners are wondering.
It like as much as we joke, it's a big deal to be nominated.
It is. It's awesome. So cool. And the guy who won, his name was Jake. Uh-huh. So Anne got so excited when she heard the J.
Oh,
she was more disappointed than I was. I was like afraid
she's
to go up
like
there
very
and say a
protective
speech. Like three awards before mine came up. I was like, I don't want to go up there. I don't want to win. Because I didn't want to say
anything.
Well,
according to The Secret, that's what you got.
Nope, that's what I got. I secreted that shit.
You sure did. Right anyway. Into your seat. Well, congratulations on your near win.
Thanks.
That's my media spin is Jamie almost won an award.
I almost did.
You did.
I mean, it's so cool. And I walked a red carpet and I got to get all dolled up. So
oh, I love it. And you did get dolled up.
Did.
All right. Well, listen, guys, before we go into our episode, we just get some tickets. Our live show is Monday, 11/26 at 7 p.m. at the Green Space.
In partnership with WNYC, and part of their podcast mixtape series.
And our guest, Stacey Ann Chin, you guys. And there's just not a ton of tickets left. So if you're in New York and you want to come, don't sleep
don't
on
wait.
Us.
Don't wait.
I don't
Don't
know.
Sleep on that. Don't sleep on us. It's like, please get off me. You're snoring. Like,
don't sleep. That sounds a lot like you've been married for 15 years and you're like, move over.
Yeah, don't sleep on us.
Yeah. please don't sleep on me.
So go to Green Space.
It's too hot.
That's GREENE space.org or the event page of our Facebook page.
All right. Today we have a remote interview with two ladies in
two
Canada.
Amazing ladies. Amazing.
Makeda and Sadie.
Yes. And they are curators, editors, and writers of the book Spawning Generations, Rants and Reflections on Growing Up with LGBTQ plus Parents.
Yeah, I mean, it's a collection of essays. And let's be honest, this is the interview we've all been so afraid about. Like, did we ruin our children?
I know. I am a little afraid of what they're going to say, but I'm also really excited and just can't wait to hear everything from them.
Let's get them in and see if we ruined our children.
Oh, God. Well,
Come on.
Here we go. Hi, guys.
Hi.
We have Sadie and Makeda here.
And they are coming to us from Canada.
Yes.
Well, so we want to start with you guys where we always do with the elevator pitch. And since you're not a couple, but you're partners in the sense of editors and writers of a book.
Oh, they're hugging.
But you're both queer spawn, as is the title of your book. So we'd love to hear each of your family stories in your elevator pitch. Who wants to start?
So... I was born to my two moms surrounded by 12 other women, and I made number 13. Already in the picture was my older brother, Aaron. And then when I was 10, my parents split up and Lois got together with her partner, Alice. And Alice has two kids, a son and a daughter, and they have become my step siblings. And we are a very blended family. And then I also have a brother, another brother. So two of the women at my birth, they just took me into their home like one night a week and I became their pseudo child. And then when they had a son, it just kind of made sense that we were siblings. And since 23 years now, he's
okay.
My
brother. I got to take it back. So Lois brought your brother Aaron from a previous relationship that her partner had given birth to Aaron, correct?
Correct.
Am I right there?
Yes, you
okay.
are.
Okay. Then, so Lois brought Aaron to your new two moms situation.
Yeah.
It's Lois and
Rachel.
Rachel.
I already forgot her name.
Lois did not give birth to you. Rachel gave birth to you.
Rachel gave birth to me. Yeah.
Okay. I get it.
Okay.
I get it. Okay.
But so now this other couple that took you one night a week, like, and this is like, you already have like, you're going back and forth between two homes and then you're also randomly going to these people's house one night a week just because?
Well, at that point, I wasn't going between two homes. My parents were still together. And so I was going between two homes still.
Not three.
And then you added a third one. And then I added a third home when my parents separated. And that was mostly just to give my parents a break one night a week.
My God. Could they swing by our house and take our kids once a week?
Yeah. Honestly,
we need people like that.
It was the best because, you know, I got to look forward to going to Amy and Moe's. Mm-hmm. And then when they had Sammy, my little brother, it made it even more exciting because I got to see him. And yeah, they're just a part of my big blended family that makes sense to me, but is, yes, very confusing to everybody else.
Yeah. So Lois and Rachel both have new partners now.
They do. And one has children.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that a lot of our listeners might be trying to get pregnant, like right now.
right now, like while they're listening to our podcast.
Exactly. Not right now, Robin. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I think what you're talking about is the importance of getting all the critical nutrients that you need. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've been thinking about that is the one way that you can do that is the Ritual Essential Prenatal Vitamin. And it's got DHA in it.
You knew exactly where I was going with this. Of course I did. Because listen, Ritual isn't your average prenatal vitamin. I like to say it's the prenatal vitamin Reborn.
I love that.
Because it delivers the 12 essential nutrients you need at every stage of pregnancy.
Yeah. You know, I just keep thinking about how hard you tried to get pregnant important something like a Ritual prenatal vitamin would be to a situation like yours. You know, just making sure that your body is in optimal health.
Yeah. It's really important and it's a lot of work. Also, they smell really good. Did you notice that?
I did.
They do.
It's just a weird thing to comment on, but I love it.
But how many vitamins do you know that smell and taste good?
No, not a lot.
Exactly.
But you know what I love about it. It's a subscription service.
I know you do. And, you know, even ladies who don't yet have a baby, right, know the importance of having something delivered right to your door when you need it.
It is true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the people with the babies know even more, but still everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing that I love about it is the subscription service is easy to start and it's also easy to snooze
but
it. Because I mean, like,
you
because sometimes, like, I get behind, like, maybe it was on
not
vacation.
Like these great tasting vitamins.
All right. You're making a good point, but I'm just saying you have that at your disposal. And it's only about $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients that are delivered. And I want to emphasize without shopping.
I know you love
that. I love that.
So, whether you're living life or creating it, why not
right
add
now.
Some good-looking science into your daily routine right now?
That's right. Visit ritual.com/OCT. Shame we can't help herself. To start your ritual today.
I'm going to say it again. That's ritual.com/OCT.
All right. So, Makeda, tell us your elevator pitch.
So, I have two moms. I've had two moms from birth, Corinne and Annette. And so Corinne and Annette were together for about 8 years. And then this was in the 80s that they got together, actually late 70s that they got together. And then in the mid 80s, they decided, you know what, we're going to try to have a kid. And they didn't really know any other people doing it at that time. And so they created a sort of do-it-yourself community of other lesbians in Vancouver, where they were living at the time, who also wanted to try to figure out how to have kids. And so, yeah, my mom's got an anonymous sperm donor, and it was actually a friend of a friend, and he wanted to remain anonymous, and my mom's also wanted him to remain anonymous.
So you don't know who it is to this day?
I actually do know who it is now, but that only happened in the last 5 to 6 years. So now I'm 32, so it didn't happen. I didn't know who he was until my late 20s.
Was that weird? Like, did you have a relationship with him before?
No, I had never met him.
So they used an anonymous donor, which was a friend of a friend, not through like a sperm bank.
Not through a sperm bank. So because at the time, it was the height of the AIDS crisis in the mid-80s. Yeah. And in Vancouver, there was basically one fertility clinic. And this fertility clinic was run by a very homophobic doctor. And so he did not inseminate lesbian couples. He didn't
He just was like, wouldn't do it.
He wouldn't do it. Yeah. Even single women had a hard time.
Right.
And the other issue, the other issue was that he wasn't testing sperm donations for HIV because he was very homophobic again. And he said publicly, well, I know all of my donors and none of my donors are quote unquote like that.
Right. Of course.
MG.
So a lot of people actually don't even know that history, like even within Canada. But my mom's had a really, really hard time finding sperm because it was really expensive to get sperm from the States, from a clinic, from a bank in the States. And so, yeah, and my mom's actually didn't know a lot of men. That just wasn't who was in their world. So
I don't mean to laugh, but it's just like so lesbian. It's like, we don't really have a lot of guy friends.
I got a lot of gay male friends, but that's because I was
They didn't even really have a lot like of gay male friends.
I have like my two guy friends from college who, before I was gay. So like, you know, they were, they're still around.
But I just want to bounce back to Sadie real fast because this is fascinating to me. Sadie, did your moms use, what did they use?
I also have an anonymous sperm donor, but it was through a sperm bank. The situation in Toronto was different and I have no way of ever knowing who my sperm donor is. Like this was before the days of ID release. Yeah. And my mom has tried to find out this information, but it's.
You should do 23andMe. You should do one of the DNA kits because people are finding their donors that way.
So I actually know of two donor siblings that I have. And I found out when I was, 18 or 19 that we actually were blood related. And I mean, it makes sense because.
So your parents knew that they had used the same donor? And
they only they told me basically as soon as they found out.
Did having that, I'm curious because we just spoke to somebody from. We spoke to someone who is a donor, like uses the same donor as one of my kids. And we had her as a guest on the show. And I'm curious, like from a kid's point of view, did knowing donor siblings change anything or help you in any way? Or like what's that experience for you?
I have talked to people who feel vastly different than I do. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm not going to say it didn't really change a lot. Like it was kind of cool to know. And I see them around and it's like, they've always kind of been family, right? So it's very much like, oh, hey, like, how are you doing? Like, I love you. You're awesome. Mm-hmm. But I think I was raised really to believe that like family is chosen. Family does not have to be blood.
Yeah. Especially with, you know, you had so many different parental figures.
You really had a chosen family.
So you really did. So, I mean, Makeda, we kind of interrupted you there. So you were talking about your parents used an anonymous donor.
Yeah. And I'm nodding my head along with Sadie around chosen family, because that's the way I grew up as well. It's, you know, I was definitely raised by my two moms, mm-hmm. Corinne and Annette, but I also feel like I have this extended family full of lesbian feminists who are like of my mom's generation, mm-hmm. and they have actually shaped me and continue to shape me, mm-hmm. and who I call my owls, older, wiser lesbians. And yeah, they're really like the community that raised me. They are my chosen family.
Yeah. I mean, we have like sort of a chosen family around us, but it's not because of the gay and lesbian thing. It's because both Mary and I have really small families. Like both my parents have died. You know, her dad's like 900 years old and she has one sister. I have one sister and that's it. And they don't live anywhere near here. So I've pretty much like stolen all of my best friend's family, like just cause they're great people and they take us under their wing. And I'm like, oh, you know, so we're choosing family for the same reason. Like, I wonder if we're more predisposed to be open and looking for that because of the LGBTQ, because we have to think about making a family.
Yeah. There's also this sense when you come out as queer or trans, there is a risk that your family rejects you. And so mm-hmm. I think like having to, you know, really find that family within your community of folks who really accept you and where you feel like you belong is something maybe that happens a little bit more, I think, in queer and trans communities. There is something to that.
I have a question for you, and I hope it's okay that I ask. How do each of you identify?
You know, knowing that you both are queer, and asking that feels fine, mm-hmm. but I think...
Does it not feel fine when other people ask you?
I mean, I guess my question often when other people maybe who are not in the community ask is like, why are you asking and how is that right. important?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I guess this must be a question that's asked of you guys a lot.
Yeah.
That it's not asked of me because you grew up with two moms. So I can see that. So I'm so sorry if I seem
you should be sorry,
stupid
Jamie.
There. But
No.
So I identify as queer, but I think what's interesting is that when I was 9 years old, I came out to my moms as straight, right? Wow. And that's the difference, right? Like you kind of, when you grow up, with lesbian moms, your whole worldview is shifted, right? So that like, yeah. I did feel like I had to come out as straight, which is really cool when I look back on it. Like most young kids don't do that because of the assumption. And then when I was actually 16 or 17, I came out again as as bisexual, and then later
you like, did like a reverse coming out.
Yeah, it's like, wait, actually, maybe
let me try this.
I'm gonna take that back.
And my moms were flabbergasted. They were so surprised. They like were like smiling, but also like so like they had to pick their jaws up off the floor, like they were so shocked.
My parents were actually quite similar. So for me, being asked about my sexuality is a very complicated question, because I've been asked about my sexuality like as I was figuring it out just for myself. Mm-hmm. And so my like classic line that I would say, because like, you know, I didn't just have to like sit in my room and stew about my own sexuality. I was like on panels, you know, talking to like queer, like prospective queer parents. And I was in newspapers and on TV and on the radio, and everyone wanted to know my sexuality.
You were like the poster child for queer spawn.
Yeah. Queer families and upholding queer families. And so I like to turn the question into a joke. You know, I would always say, well, you know, I was always raised by too many women. I don't need any more in my life.
Right.
Wait, that's a good joke.
Good. That's good.
Well done.
Right,
well done.
Right? Yeah. No, 16-year-old.
Way to bounce it back.
I was super smart.
You still are, Sadie.
Thanks. And so that was like I didn't even think about that line. It just, you know, came out. And then, well, when I was 16, I like had this huge crush on someone who, if I dated them, would make me not straight.
Okay.
It was like really upsetting for me, because it felt like it wasn't just homophobia I would face personally. It's like, I felt like I was like letting down my community.
Right. By not turning out straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of like, you know, yeah, it's sort of like when you're on those panels, in a way you feel like there's this unspoken thing of like, in order to prove to like the homophobic society that we live in, that we turned out quote unquote all right. Yeah. That
show like, your best self.
Exactly. And we would totally have to be straight.
That's really, really interesting that you felt pressure
from a young
to
age.
Still show, like, it's just so backwards and twisted, like to show that, yes, I was raised in a gay family and a homosexual family and a queer family, but no, look, I'm normal just like you guys. Yeah. And that's what's normal. And that's the way we're supposed to be. So this is, you know, like it's so twisted.
Because it wasn't just a concept, you know, like I watched people on TV making the argument that gay people were going to raise gay children. Like I saw that. Like literally one, like there was one like media clip where me and my mom were like shown getting ready for school. And the next clip was this like homophobic dude sitting in an office with his like big heavy binder, like that proves
with stats.
That gay people could. Yeah, exactly. With the stats.
There's science in this binder. There's science in here.
And, I mean, hilariously on the TV clip, the binder was actually empty.
Of course it was. Okay.
I know. That's just like a little fun, hilarious thing that I think is like really funny. Like, and like, if like the angle is just right, that you could see like the big black hole that like was binder. But still, he was like saying to like, maybe it was on Global or CBC or all of our, you know, big Canadian news channels, that we were going to be raised not right. And so I, you know, like, of course there was a need to make the counterpoint that actually, no, we are all right. And all right means straight.
Ugh, and that's going on the assumption exactly that there's something wrong with gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so hard for you. I'm sorry about that. And then also that's what's so sad in this society, in this world right now. There's nothing wrong with it.
Jamie.
Yes.
I have been trying to find jeans again.
Oh, no. Why do you do this to yourself? You've told me many times.
I have.
That if you're not 21, you just can't find jeans. That's a fact. Hashtag facts.
Okay. A, please don't hashtag things. B, that's okay. I'm now reversing my whole thing. I'm saying right. That's not true because, really? Yes, in the past, I've had a hard time finding jeans because mm-hmm. either, you know, they're like too tight in the waist or they're huge in the legs.
Yes. Or you just had a baby.
Yeah. Or whatever. Nothing fits. All those things. But I found MyFit jeans and Jamie, they are incredible. Period. End of conversation.
Okay.
Look, they're on point, they're on trend, they're stylish, they're seasonless. I mean, and the best part, it's basically like you're wearing yoga pants.
You're lying to
me. No, I am not, Jamie. I am wearing them right now. Can you please?
Oh, they're so cute.
I know. And feel them. Feel them.
Ooh.
They are soft.
So soft.
And they breathe with me. Don't be creepy about my jeans. And they breathe with me and they move with me and they conform to my curves.
I can't. I need you to sit down, please.
I can't. I'm doing lunges in my jeans. They're fantastic.
You know what I feel like? I feel like these jeans would be great for the holidays when, you know, you fluctuate in weight a little bit mm-hmm. due to all the pies.
Lots
you know,
of pies.
Hashtag pies.
Okay, I'm ignoring that.
Okay, hashtag ignore, because that's how I'm rolling.
Okay, while she's rolling, I want to tell everybody that MyFit jeans come in three colors, dark wash, light wash, and black.
Ooh.
And they have a 60-day risk-free trial.
Ooh.
So, I mean, if you're not fully satisfied, you can just return them. And you get, guess what? A full refund.
Wow.
And they cover shipping. Why would you not?
Amazing.
I mean, look, everybody listening, yeah, you have to get them. Jamie, you have to get them because you're going to love MyFit jeans.
I'll try them.
And right now they're offering our listeners, that's you guys, an exclusive deal. So if you just buy one pair, you get 15% off. And if you buy two, the second pair is 50% off. So
wow.
Just go to MyFitJeans.com and enter the code OCT.
Did you guys get all that? Because I'm going to repeat it right
mm-hmm.
now. Go to MyFitJeans.com and enter code OCT to get 15% off your first pair of MyFit jeans. If you buy two, you'll get the second pair at 50% off. Just use code OCT for this unbelievable deal at MyFitJeans.com.
And then you too can do lunges in your jeans.
Hashtag jeans.
Hashtag lunges. Can I ask you, is this in part why you guys decided to write Queerspawn or to edit or to pull together this book?
Yeah, I think that in pulling together Spawning Generation, Sadie and I were really clear about a couple of things. And one of those things was that we wanted to be able to tell, or I guess allow the space for Queerspawn to tell a more complicated story than we're often able to tell. We wanted to hear about what people struggled with. We talk a lot about it being like not having to airbrush our mm-hmm. stories and our lives and sort of existing outside of that narrative that is, we turned out all right. And challenging that because most families don't have to contend or wrestle with that societal pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did you get started on the book? Like, how did you meet and decide you were going to do this?
Demeter Press, who is our publisher, actually reached out because they saw like a gap in their literature.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked if we wanted to do it. And we had never actually, so Makeda and I have known each other our whole lives.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah.
So, like our moms were in the same community.
Totally. She was a little bit older than I was. And so, you know, when you're kids, that gap is like really big.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And so we weren't like necessarily really close friends like we have become, but like we really supported each other through this trial by fire process. And now we both do identify as editors, you know, because uh-huh. we really learned along the way how to do it. And yeah.
And I think it's not just like we kind of grew up doing this book because it was over 3 years that it took really to make this book happen. And it really felt like the process kind of grew us, like
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. kind of came into ourselves more, I think, as writers and editors and also in Queerspawn.
I was going to say, did it change how you felt about your family?
So it didn't particularly like change my personal relationship to my family, but it reawakened my Queerspawn identity. in that I felt a new drive to advocate for our community in terms of queer spawn in queer spaces. Because oftentimes we don't feel invited or important or queer enough to be in queer spaces. And so
it's like by association, like your parents are the ones who are queer. You are just like the kids that, you know,
exactly
raised by them.
So like it really reawakened that drive to like put our stories out there and to have people understand why, like why we're here and why we're important.
Well, these are definitely stories that are not told very often.
Yeah.
Actually, well, at all.
Because they're just now starting to happen.
Yeah, they're just, everybody's growing up now.
But it reminds me of the way people who are sometimes biracial kids talk about not feeling part of this community and not feeling part of that community.
Right.
Just feeling
right.
a little other.
Right.
Yeah, like I think that we often don't feel at home in straight spaces. And yet we feel like the older we get, the more pushed out we are of queer spaces. And that's really can be very hurtful. And we really saw this book as an opportunity for us not only to claim space, and but also to really connect with each other as well and build community across borders.
It's funny. I was just thinking like at the places like the Gay and Lesbian Center should have a group or, you know, for you guys.
There's not.
I don't know. I mean, they have all the family stuff going up to it, but that'd be something that'd be interesting to check into to see if that exists.
In the States, there's Collage.
Okay. Collage.
I don't know about Collage.
Oh, you need to know about Collage and your children need to know about Collage.
Yeah.
So tell me about Collage.
Collage is a national queer spawn network. That has chapters in many states. I started going to Collage conferences when I was 15 or 16 or maybe 17. Who knows? But it just like it changed my life. Like it was the first time I was in a room of just queer spawn. And it made me realize like how important and it was for all of us. And like for me, like it was something that I was missing to hear my story reflected.
Yep.
And just hear other people be like, yeah, I feel you, you know, that's been my experience.
What I'm taking from this is that you guys do feel, I don't know if a void is the right term, but the absence of community in your lives with other people just like you who were raised in queer families like you.
Like I often equate this to my Jewish identity, right? So like I'm Jewish. I was raised Jewish. I never lose that identity. Mm-hmm. It's never taken from me. Mm-hmm. And so similarly, I was raised by queer people. You know, I was raised in the community, but somehow that identity is different. I mean, and I understand why.
Based on what you became as an adult. Like if you identify outward as straight, then suddenly you are losing this connection to something that's still a big part of you.
Exactly. And we all know that being queer is more than who you sleep with. It's a community, right? Like this podcast is part of that, right?
It's a community.
It's a community.
Exactly.
So to me, it feels the same as my Jewish identity. These are the people I was raised around. This is the culture I was raised in. Why suddenly are you taking away that community from me and the only community I've ever known? You know?
Yeah. I never would have thought of that.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And more and more, our communities are articulating the idea of being culturally queer because, and it's amazing, like having edited this book and seeing parts of our experiences reflected in other people's stories was just, it was like so affirming to realize, oh my gosh, like across borders as well, we are like this kind of cultural experience that you had is so similar to what I experienced. Mm. And that was so empowering, I think, for both of us. And not to say that all queer spawn are going to have a similar cultural understanding because there are so many variations of queer culture within queer culture, but just that I think there is something to this idea of being culturally queer.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so interesting. I'm sorry, Robin, but I'm just like,
don't be
in my
sorry,
head,
Jamie.
I'm like, we got to do right by our kids.
Well,
we
I mean,
right
that, and by the way, all I'm thinking is like, thank God I'm sending my kids to Camp Highlight.
Well, I'm like, going when she's old enough.
We sent my daughter to sleepaway camp. It's a week and it's all kids of LGBTQ families.
We got to keep this in our radar. We got to think about this because I never thought about that. Like, you're raised in a queer culture, then you're shot off into the world and you look and seem straight, some kind of way, as the kids say.
And that's who you become.
And that's who you become in this world. But your identity is queer culture, queer. It's just so interesting to me.
It really is. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah. Like, it's where you feel like home.
It's home.
Mm-hmm. Like, for me, like I get to play the queer card because I'm also queer. But for me, actually, the identity I relate to more than being queer is being queer spawn.
That's more defining for you.
Yeah, because I've only been queer for 10 years. I've been queer spawn for 26 years.
Right.
Like,
well, we have somebody from the book giving us a little bit of a clip. So this is Kimmy Lynn.
The story that I chose to share in Spawning Generations is really about secrets, shame, and ultimately the healing that I've found in my life. I grew up in an LGBTQ family, Back to the Land movement, with a bunch of hippie queer folks, a story that has a lot of magic and power to it, but a story that I've never really been able to tell in its fullness. So for this book, I chose to focus on the part of my family story that I haven't been able to ever share because of external pressure to package my family as quote unquote normal, to prove to others that LGBTQ parents are quote unquote good parents, whatever that means. When in reality, there was a lot of violence and sexual trauma in my family in childhood that I really feel was inextricably connected to external homophobia, internal homophobia, and the trauma that comes from that. Writing this essay was the first time I ever got to say, here is all of my pain and joy and magic and sorrow that this body and that my family holds, and I get to be messy. I don't have a story with an easy ending or an ending at all, really, for that matter. And in order for me to heal and for my family to start the healing journey and to interrupt these cycles of violence, I needed to be able to speak my full truth and have both the reader, the LGBTQ community, and our allies hold and honor all of the complexities that come with that.
That's a powerful, powerful clip.
Also kind of right in line with what you guys have just been saying to us this whole time.
Yeah, I think that because Sadie and I went into this project with the explicit goal of wanting to hear sort of unvarnished, more complicated stories about folks that have grown up in LGBTQ families, we might have been surprised at just how deep and raw and vulnerable contributors were willing to get with us and to share with us.
Yeah. While I wasn't surprised that people wanted to tell their complicated truths, when I first read Kimmy Lynn's story, I don't know what I was hit by. It's kind of indescribable. And like, even just listening to their clip, like, fills me with like there's tears behind my eyes right now. But like, what I was surprised by was that it wasn't just healing for them in their story, but also healing for me. Yeah. And like, working with this person so closely and witnessing them be so vulnerable and so honest with their story, it was like, my heart is full, you know, and that surprised me how full that story and how full all these stories makes my heart.
Well, it's obvious when you guys talk about the people in your book, you're very protective of them. It's obvious. And you really do hold them in your hearts. You can just tell by the way you speak of them, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
That's a huge compliment. Yeah. And I think is affirming to hear that reflected back.
Yeah.
Through the contributors, the author's openness, I think that I was able to be more open and feel like I could share more through writing the chapter that I wrote. Mm-hmm. And my chapter changed actually halfway through the process.
Did you ever have any concerns or worries about what your parents or the LGBTQ community would say about the book or about the honesty? Or did you feel like, fuck it, it's time for us to be open?
Both. Like, both are true. We both were totally like, fuck it. And we both were like, are we going to get criticism for this?
Did you get any criticism?
Not that we know of, actually, from that angle, not that we know of. I think I had a moment just before, like actually right after sending the very, very final manuscript to the publisher, and we knew it was going to be printed that week. I had this moment of being very scared about what the larger queer community was going to think of the book.
Yeah.
But then it was nice because I think Sadie helped ground me again in like our original intentions of the book, which was to say, not necessarily fuck it, but it was to say, here we are. Please see us in all of our complexity.
Oh.
Please see us for the kind of wholeness that we are as people, like our entirety as people. And I think
amazing.
The other thing that we really wanted to make sure came across in the book was the intention to help queer and trans families, queer and trans parents, particularly, maybe take a deep breath with us and just kind of to say to them, it's okay that you're not perfect too. We're not perfect, right. And it's okay that you're not perfect too. And let's have a conversation about that, and let's create space for that to be a conversation that we can have within our larger community.
I feel like you're also reinforcing too, like some of the stuff we've been hearing over and over again about just openness and communication about all of this and, you know, being in this space, because I'm just thinking of like having like Camp Highlight and having all these things and having it all around the kids now, like, you know, because it's like because there's been a more normalized, there's more people having like LGBTQ families having kids. There's more. I wonder if that takes some of the pressure off. It doesn't solve your issue of being kind of booted out of a community, but I wonder if that helps, like not having the poster children aspect of things.
I think that like, as long as there's homophobia and transphobia, there's going to be a little bit of feeling within our communities, no matter how much more common we get, of having to prove to people, to homophobic, transphobic people, that we turned out all right.
Right, that's a really valid systemic point. I mean, my eyes have been open to in this conversation. It's like a systemic problem. My eyes are opened by you guys. I have a lot to think about.
I mean, like, similar to the camp that you send your daughter to, both McCade and I have been counselors at Camp Ten Oaks, which is the Canadian version of that camp. But it's for queer and trans youth and kids with queer and trans families.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I would think similarly in that, like, oh, it's getting better, but unfortunately, and
it's the bubble.
I hate having to say this, but it's like I hear the same stories coming from the 8-year-olds that, like, that my generation experienced.
You know.
And I'm like,
as long as it's still out there in the atmosphere,
I know
there's a lot of homophobia out there. Yeah. It's true.
I
can't wait to read the book.
I can't wait to read this book, you guys.
I mean, it's just
it's
out. It's already in Canada. Is it out in the U.S.?
It is. So the name of the book is Spawning Generations, Rants and Reflections on Growing Up with LGBTQ+ Parents. And we do have a New York City launch at Blue Stockings Bookstore on January 23rd. Oh, yay. We've never been. We're really excited. Mm-hmm. On January 23rd, 2019 at 7 p.m.
Great.
Ooh,
great. Mm-hmm. Everybody should go check them out.
But and you can still buy it in the States now.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, because we have a Canadian publisher, we still have an e-version of the book available on Amazon. But okay. I don't think that we have, at this point, many, many sort of US-based distributors. However, okay. yeah. once we have the launch of Blue Stockings, Blue Stockings will have copies of the book.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For our New York listeners.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I feel like it's a great Christmas gift for all my gay yes. mom friends. So.
Well, I thank you so much yes. for coming by and share. Well, you didn't really come by, but for virtually sharing your story with us all the way from Canada.
Yeah, Canada.
This was fantastic, guys.
Yeah, my eyes are opened. I have a lot to think about, yeah. really. There needs to be workshops done on this. Like, people need to go into schools and talk about
it. We have enough projects on our plate, Jamie. Someone else is going to
I have so many ideas right now about how we need to, like, get awareness out there. So
check out Collage, too.
Yeah. They are so cool.
They're so amazing.
Okay. Yeah, like we're going to check out Collage. Maybe we'll get Collage on here.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah.
That was great.
Ooh, yeah.
That was really great. Okay. I mean, I feel like I walked away with, we kind of might ruin our children, but then maybe not.
Well, they're so smart, so intelligent, so yeah. well-spoken.
But I like that they're changing the narrative. I really yeah. do, that they're like, we are these people and these are our full stories.
Yeah, it's really not all rainbows and sunshine, which we're trying to portray with our podcast too. Although a lot of times we do have these happy, oh, it's all working out.
No, we talk about the hard things too.
It can be tough. So
don't be mean to our podcast, Jamie.
But these girls, you know, they're really successful and they're strong young ladies.
And you should go see them when their New York City launch date at Blue Stockings.
We're gonna stock
Wednesday the 23rd at 7 p.m.
January 23rd, 2019, 7 p.m.
Yeah, I left out the month there. That'd be helpful. Because otherwise, you're just standing out in front of Blue Stockings.
It's
like,
not this Friday.
Is it? Tonight
or Saturday? I don't know.
Tonight? What about tonight? Well, we'll be there. We'll be stalking them. So thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for stopping by.
Yeah, and we're gonna be maybe doing a little. Maybe you should be watching our social media. We might do a little giveaway of their book. I don't know.
I think we should.
Maybe.
I think we should, because everybody should read this, especially if you are parents,
mm-hmm.
gay parents.
You hear this and follow us on Instagram, and you'll be automatically entered to win.
Yeah.
Ovaries_talk on Instagram.
Yeah. Twitter at ovaries talk.
And Facebook.
If these ovaries could talk.
Yes.
And also, you guys, please get your tickets.
There's not a lot of tickets left. So if you want to come, and we want to meet you, so come to thegreenspace.org, GREENE.
And get your ticks.
And you can get tickets for our live event on Monday the 26th.
Oh my gosh, it's 7 p.m.
Fun. Woo!
And we also have to thank our sponsors for this episode.
Yes, Ritual and MyFit Jeans. Thank you guys so much for sponsoring us and believing in us.
Don't forget to use the promo code OCT for your purchases. And
a little bit of a funny story. Earlier today,
Robin goes...
She said, shut up.
Do you think that's like our own unique code? I was like, yeah, Robin, it's OCT. But what does it stand for? Do you think it said ovaries could talk? What's
I thought
wrong
it stood because when we started doing the ads, it was like October. Like nearing October. So I was like, oh, when are they going to give us November? I was like, when are we getting NOV? So use our own unique code, OCT, that stands for ovaries could talk. And also know that I am the dumbest host ever, and Jamie is still laughing at me. And while she's doing that, I'm going to say, eggs, OCT ovaries, out.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.